Every improv show is truly a surprise, both for the audience and for the performers. It's not at all like when I've gone with my spouse to see Raisin in the Sun or The Glass Menagerie, when we have the option to read the play, or at least the Wikipedia article, ahead of time. At the improv show, there's no playbill that gives a list of who's playing which character, or a background of the playwright, because there are no definite characters, because there is no script. We have a buddy in an improv troupe, and they always start their shows by asking a member of the audience some questions first. Where do you live? What's the worst thing about being home for the holidays? You say you're here with your husband. Is that your husband? Oh, that's your brother. Why is your brother the third wheel on your date with your husband? Using cues from that initial conversation, the troupe creates scene after scene right there on the spot. No script, no pre-planning. At any given performance, our buddy might be a pouting child or a tugboat or a rat in the Alston-Brighton neighborhood of Boston terrorizing a group of college students. There's great excitement, anxiety, and hope during these performances. What will they come up with next? Will they manage to be funny? For a number of reasons, I believe that improv is a theater form well-suited to Unitarian Universalists. Improv is an art form with no director, no singular holy script. Yet improv has a vital history and best practices that the actors can draw on. To my Unitarian Universalist ears, this sounds quite familiar. Many of the best practices of improv closely align with our faith's historic theology and modern-day principles. We could talk about the importance of a cohesive troupe, or allowing the rest of the troupe to speak as much as you do. But there's one rule in particular I'd like to focus on today as a practice for the progressive faithful, and that rule is yes, and. Comedian and producer Tina Fey writes about yes and in her book, Bossy Pants. She writes, "The first rule of improvisation is always agree and say yes. When you're improvising, this means you are required to agree with whatever your partner has created. Hence my friend's jumps between a child, a tugboat, a rat." Now, obviously, in real life, you're not always going to agree with everything everyone says. But the rule of agreement reminds you to respect what your partner has created and to at least start from an open-minded place. Start with a yes and see where it takes you. She adds, "As an improviser, I always find it jarring when I meet someone in real life whose first answer is no. No, we can't do that. No, that's not in the budget. What kind of way is that to live?" Have any of you heard these attitudes at church recently? Yes, let's see where this takes us. Or a no, we can't do that. Not in the budget. I certainly have, particularly the latter. Let's return to Tina Fey. The second rule of improvisation is not only to say yes, but yes, and. You are supposed to agree and then add something of your own. If I start a scene with, "I can't believe it's so hot in here," and you just say, "Yeah," then we're kind of at a standstill. But if I say, "I can't believe it's so hot in here," and you say, "Yes, this can't be good for the wax figures," now we're getting somewhere. To me, yes and means don't be afraid to contribute. It's your responsibility to contribute. Your initiations are worthwhile. Fay gives us two things to think about. What if we said yes more often? And what if we considered every contribution, including our own, as potentially worthwhile? These questions make me reflect on whether I'm living out our Unitarian Universalist seven principles: the inherent worth and dignity of every being, the use of the democratic process, acceptance and encouragement of one another. In religious terms, the rule of yes and challenges us to adopt a theology of abundance instead of a theology of scarcity. The theology of abundance is trusting that we have enough and enough to spare. It has deep religious roots in two faith traditions that have thrived on the North American continent, indigenous religion and Christianity. Unitarian Universalist minister Reverend Clyde Grubbs says that living out the indigenous principle of abundance means discerning within our religious communities what resources we have been given in abundance, such as love, enthusiasm, joy, good singing, smart and well-connected lay leaders, and finding ways to maximize those resources instead of dwelling on any perceived limitations. It also requires discernment about how much is actually needed, because we only borrow the earth from our grandchildren. Australian writer and Aboriginal activist Samantha Nolan Smith writes, "Indigenous people around the world tell a remarkably similar story about a state of nature which is free, abundant, open, and trusting, where everything one needs is provided for, where one only takes what one is needed, and where time is allowed for replenishment of resources." The indigenous theology of abundance gives us some healthy boundaries to practice in community. Give and act with trust in abundance while remaining responsible stewards of our abundant earth. Christianity's theology of abundance also assumes communal responsibility. Jesus was outspoken about generosity. In the Gospels, he's quoted as saying, "Sell your possessions and give alms. Do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying, for it is the nations of the world that strive after all these things, and your God knows that you need them." For those of us who have not lived a life of plenty, this sounds like pretty bad advice. Give away everything we have? Don't think about where our next meal is coming from? Are we really supposed to survive on faith alone? I think this is not quite what Jesus meant. He makes an important distinction between the nations of the world who strive after all these material things and the community of faith. Perhaps it is in religious community that we create an environment of abundance by providing for one another, in stark contrast to the materialistic and egocentric culture around us. Unitarian Universalist minister Reverend Tom Beloit writes, "One story goes that Jesus is preaching to a large crowd, a crowd that may have traveled quite a distance, may have had to wait longer than they had thought. The day wears on and the crowd begins to grumble that they are hungry. Jesus calls for food to be brought forward, and his disciples bring forth a couple of loaves of bread and a single fish. A miracle happens. 5,000 are fed. The liberal interpretation of this story goes that as the day wore on, people began to worry about whether there would be enough to eat. So they started to conceal whatever food they had carried along with them, worried that others would see what they had and ask them to share. Jesus' miracle, according to this interpretation, is getting people to share freely and to partake in the abundance that already exists, instead of closing ourselves off from one another because of a sense of scarcity." As blogger Kate Perkin writes, "In the economy of God, everyone has all they need, and there is always enough to go around." In our Unitarian Universalist faith, we believe that if there are any gods out there, God's hands are our hands. It's up to us to spread the abundance of God's economy, asking for what we need and giving all we can. In Unitarian Universalism, we believe that every person has something unique and important to contribute to the ongoing pursuit of spiritual enrichment and communal justice. We may ask ourselves, what talents do we each have to joyfully share with our communities? Unfortunately, despite indigenous and Christian roots in abundance, it is a theology of scarcity that thrives today in the United States. What is the theology of scarcity? The theology of scarcity is a theology of desperation, of fear, of selfishness. Unlike the theology of abundance, living a theology of scarcity gives a feeling of not having enough, and certainly not having enough to spare. It's a little ironic, isn't it? Here we are in the United States, the wealthiest country in the world, and yet there is a great feeling of scarcity. It is our own culture's fault. The cult of consumerism tells us every day through commercials and billboards and subway ads that we do not have enough and we really should try to get more. This makes everyone feel desperate. The ever-growing economic gap between those who are very rich and those who are not results in hoarding behavior in almost everyone, regardless of economic status. For those who have not, there's a clinging onto whatever's left, and for those who have, there's a deep fear of becoming someone who has not. This also makes everyone feel desperate. Social Darwinism, an evil misapplication of science, teaches that only the strong survive because we are in competition with one another for very limited resources, as opposed to being connected and reliant on one another through the interdependent web of all existence. This also makes everyone feel desperate. Christian Old Testament scholar Walter Brueggemann says it in this way: if you are like me, you read sacred writings on a good day, but you watch Nike ads every day. According to the Nike story, whoever has the most shoes when they die wins. The Nike story says there are no gifts to be given because there's no giver. We end up only with whatever we manage to get for ourselves. This story ends in despair. It gives us a present tense of anxiety, fear, greed, and brutality. It produces child and domestic abuse, indifference to the poor, the buildup of armaments, divisions between people, and environmental destruction. It tells us not to care about anyone but ourselves, and it is the prevailing creed of American society. There's no quick and easy way to replace the dominant culture of scarcity with a culture of abundance. But we can start where we are and practice abundance in our congregations. So even when we're pummeled by scarcity the rest of the week, anytime we're in church, we can remember, yes, and. And if enough of us practice a theology of abundance together, perhaps we can change hearts and minds outside of our congregation's walls as well. This is a critical practice for us, especially if we hope to weather truly lean times and periods of crisis. I was so proud of my current church just after the Boston Marathon bombings, which happened 3 blocks away from our house of worship, that we did not succumb to a theology of scarcity. We didn't close up our doors and hide, worried there was no budget of money or heart for a tragedy. We gave each other permission to be creative in healing ourselves and healing our city. Someone suggested we host a candlelight vigil, even though the bombers were still on the loose. Yes, and. Someone suggested we invite our religious neighbors and make it interfaith. Yes, and. Someone suggested we sing Amazing Grace and read from Anne Frank and Wendell Berry. Yes, and. Someone suggested we place blank cloth ties on our church's fence so people could leave their prayers for peace and love. Yes, and. Someone suggested we take down the thousands of prayer ties before the winter weather destroyed them and weave them into a quilt. Yes, and. I cannot calculate how much would have been lost if every time someone had made a suggestion, the first reaction had been no, there's not enough. In spite of tragedy, our faith community lived out an abundance of creativity, of courage, of love, accepting and encouraging each other. Together, we were strong and bold. As we heard in the opening words from Reverend Anthony Maker, the challenge for us ultimately is this: how shall we live in this abundance? Will we allow it to change us? Will we let it sink in, transform us from within? Could we try it? Could we try being together in an abundant, yes and sort of way? Perhaps we can put aside our worries and limitations, resisting the theology of scarcity from the larger culture. Our congregations are overflowing with love, enthusiasm, joy, good singing, passionate members. We live amidst great abundance. May we start with a yes to one another and see where it takes us. May we have the courage to offer our ideas and our talents, knowing that we will be met with love. May we remember that in God's economy, there is enough, and even just enough, to share. Blessed be, and amen.